Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us today from McMinnville, Oregon. I'm Stephen Long, author of the novel There's a Somebody. And if you care to contact me, it's real easy. Either my website, stephenwlong.com, or the book's Facebook page, which is There's a Somebody. And I'm really pleased today to have as my guest Susan Barnes-White. Susan is the library director at our local college, which is Linfield College, just a beautiful campus. And a couple of things that we want to cover today, so we'll get started. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So a couple of things. You know, first, I don't think had an adequate chance to thank you. You sort of helped put together an event that I was at, and that went well, and I just wanted to thank you for that. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, that was great, having all those Yamhill County authors come. Great idea.
A lot of local talent.
Yeah,
so,
we should do
that. You know,
again.
I know that you've got a boy, that's on tape now, so we're going to do that. You've got the kind of a special exhibit coming up. It's the Lincoln exhibit, and could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Starting this Thursday, April 3rd, we'll be exhibiting and hosting a wide variety of speakers on a Lincoln exhibit. The exhibit is called Lincoln, the Constitution, the Civil War. And let's see, the library in Linfield College applied to host this exhibit probably 3.5 years ago. And it's touring all around the country. So we're very lucky to have it out here in Oregon. It was organized by the National Constitution Center and the American Library Association. And was made possible by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. So it's really exciting. We're one of the few academic libraries in the country to host it. We're opening this week, this Thursday at 7:30. Professor Emeritus Leon Litwack from UC Berkeley will be talking initially. He is quite well known and has written many books and a gazillion articles. He's a Pulitzer Prize winning historian. His expertise is on slavery, the Reconstruction era. And he's won also the National Book Award and the Francis Parkman Prize for his book that's titled Been in the Storm So Long. He has also taught at University of Wisconsin, University of South Carolina, and in Colorado College. So he's our first speaker. This is all free, open to the public. In fact, the exhibit's open anytime the library is open between now and May 16th when we take the exhibit down and ship it off to the next library. And then on Tuesday, April 15th, we're hosting historian Ronald White, Jr., whose biography won a Pulitzer. And his biography is simply called A. Lincoln, a Biography. It was just published in 2009. His biography also won a New York Times, Washington Post, and Los Angeles Times Bestseller Award. It also received the Christopher Award, which is awarded to books affirming the highest values in the human spirit. And he's written eight books total, and he's right now a scholar at the Huntington, but he started out his career at Whitman University in Washington State. So he's eager to come back to the Northwest. And then in May, we're hosting a conference that Professor Nicholas Bicola he's a political scientist here. He is bringing seven Lincoln scholars from around the country. And we have, it's going to be a C-SPAN worthy affair, as Nick always says. So we have the most well-known are Alan Gelzo from Gettysburg College and John Stauffer from Harvard University. They're the two probably authors who are well-known within the popular press. And then we have a host of other scholars coming from Michigan State, Brandeis, Johns Hopkins, and various institutions, University of Notre Dame. So we have some really stellar people coming. They all speak during the day. The schedules are about to be put up on the web. And, again, it's all free and open to the public. That's one of the caveats of this grant was to open everything to the public for free. So Linfield does a lot of the library does a lot of programming here for the public to enjoy, and this is just one example of the kind of programming we do. So libraries no longer hold books; we hold programs.
Right. We'll get to that because I want to explore that a little bit. But I just have to put in a plug for you and the college and our town. And this McMinnville is by no means a backwater, but I think the quality of the college, the programs that they put on, to me are surprising. And it and I think that the college is sort of the anchor for this town. And I'm just so thrilled to be here. This is really a wonderful place to be. Mm. I actually have encouraged my granddaughter to attend Linfield, so we're still working on that.
Oh, that's great.
Anyway, just well done, well done. It's a terrific program and institution. Yeah, so let's get after this, your vision of the library. I know it's a little bit different than the staid repository of just books. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think that's partly driven by technological evidence that more and more information that used to be housed within the walls of a library, the print magazines and journals and newspapers and the print books, are disappearing into the cloud space and becoming all digital. So libraries, by necessity and because we want to be have value for our students, faculty, and town patrons, are reinventing ourselves. We have been ever since I became a librarian 30 years ago. So one thing that we're doing well, both college, university, and public libraries, is we're increasingly becoming spots, places, where people can gather to hear authors or writers speak. And that's something that we've done for more than a decade with predominantly our English department, but also other departments in the college, as well as the public library, because we live in a small town, what, we're 33,000 people about in McMinnville. Mm-hmm. The public library and the local bookstore and this library collaborate often on events because we really believe that part of the experience of people in libraries is people connecting with writers who write the materials that they might read. And that's been quite a success, I think. And many college, university, and public libraries are doing this, in addition to providing coffee and tea.
Yeah, okay. I have to wonder, for as an outsider, this seems, and in retrospect, it seems completely organic and completely predictable. If we go back 10 years, was there pressure on you? Did you have some nervousness about, is the library going to be relevant, or is all this very natural, this progression?
Well, I never worried that Linfield Library would be relevant because I never believed it, even 20 years ago when people told me that we could get all the Library of Congress books on, you know, on our laptops. I always was a bit skeptical about technology being the solution for people and their knowledge making. I think technology plays a large role and enables libraries to reinvent themselves, but I think it's a good thing that libraries and other institutions, look at online education, have to take hard looks at themselves and figure out how to remain relevant. And I think it's actually very exciting now, the role that librarians have, not only in programming, but in teaching and learning, and both in public and academic libraries, because we can really focus on what matters most, and that's bringing relevant, good information to our users. And that's really the primary role of libraries. We just don't keep the books dusted, which we never did anyway, but that was always the, you know, the example. So, no, I didn't feel pressure.
Like
I saw it as great opportunity.
Well, I'm glad. It seems like that to me. You know, you kind of touched on something that I've wondered about. The internet or technology has made, I guess it would be small d democratic. there's so much accessible. And do you feel that maybe you help guide people and sift through that, or is it just all there? Well, let me say it a different way. I mean, you know, when I was younger, I'd go to the library and I'd ask somebody, can you help me find, or what would you suggest? And now they just open their laptop and take off. Do people still come and ask for that kind of guidance?
They do, although they might do it online or via the phone or via chat. But they still sometimes come in person. Although, you know, like many libraries, we have probably fewer face-to-face, right at the reference desk kinds of questions. But overall, mm-hmm. we have just the same number of requests we've always had. So I think librarians, even more than ever, contribute to the teaching and learning of all students, faculty, and community users. So at Linfield, we've had a teaching mission for even longer than I've been here. So because we've never had the scholarly complete collection, because we're a small teaching college with a small teaching library. So we've always participated in the teaching and learning, what goes on in the classrooms, first year through fourth year, and with our adult degree students as well. What we can bring now is we can actually bring to our students and faculty more resources than they could ever lay their eyes upon even a decade ago. So we're able to bring them more, mm-hmm. but that makes it more difficult to sort through for students, I'm thinking. Faculty know what they want, but students are novice in the disciplinary knowledge building that they're doing. So what we can do is work with faculty as faculty librarians to help teach students how to figure out the most efficient way to search anything online and how you think about any artifact that students find online, because it's tricky. Everything online looks more or less the same, right? So there are cues, there are ways to think about information, be it in print or online, that we teach our students to utilize. And we emphasize that credibility is very important.
That's, I was thinking of that as you were speaking. So here's two things. This is my prejudice, and it's probably wrong, but I think about students primarily as being younger people, and younger people almost having like a genetic predisposition for technology. I think that you're not your job probably isn't to show them how to use a laptop, but
no.
They haven't been exposed to the big world, and I see that stuff, and I'm certainly more skeptical. You'll see big claims. And as somebody said, big claims require big proof. So it sounds like you can guide them to things that are meaningful as opposed to somebody's opinion or fiction, you know, presented as fact, but really it has no basis in research. And so then that if that's all true, then it leads me to think, you must be a busy lady trying to keep up with that sort of thing.
Well, I work with terrific staff here, and we are all really busy trying to provide the best learning environment and the best resources we can for Linfield faculty, students, staff, and the McMinnville community, Yamhill County in general. Because anyone in Yamhill County can have a card for free. That's unusual for a private college to offer that. But we've always had good town-gown relationship here since the 30s. So almost 80 years ago, right? We are busy because technology does always force us to rethink how we present information to students and faculty and how we talk about it. And it takes students trial and error, too, to understand fully how to think about any artifact they might find on the web. And credibility is you have to be able to understand what you're looking for, to be able to judge opinion versus fact, to figure out what's fact and what's opinion. It's complicated. So it certainly takes all 4 years of a student being here and beyond to really know how to think their way through. And it takes going beyond Google and taking the top five results. So that's what we talk about. This isn't just because something's online and it's fast to retrieve information doesn't mean that you still have to think about it, and thinking still takes time. You know, students often think, oh, well, I'll just Google this and find the answer. But answers are actually more complicated today than when you or I were in school. I think.
Yeah, God
bless you.
It's
not as certain as all. I'm not presuming to announce how old we are, but certainly when we were in college, it was a different universe. Because colleges only libraries only purchased the best, what they thought was the best anyway. And now we don't necessarily have no control.
There was sort of a vetting
control.
Process.
There was, but we have no control anymore. We lost control a long time ago.
Right.
Well, that's fine.
I think for me, and that's what I meant about being democratic, that the world has been thrown open.
That's right.
So I think, as it always happens, with more freedom comes more responsibility. We can really access basically anything, but now it's up to the individual, and again, maybe with some guidance, to work your way through that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, Susan, I wanted to ask you, do you think that technology has, in any fundamental way, changed the students? Are they different? and if they are different, are they different because of technology, or are they different because people just, you know, that culture changes over time?
Well, I hesitate to make generational conclusions when our generation was defined so heavily by media in the 70s and late 60s, and many of us weren't like some of the people who were being highlighted in the media. You know, I would think culture changes all the time, and parental child-rearing rate changes. I think technology does has changed all of us in that we expect speed, rapid information, and perhaps our lives are all more complex, and we expect we want more efficacy. I'm not even sure that's the word, efficaciousness, whatever the word might be.
Boy, that's terrific.
I'm not sure. But I'm not sure.
If it isn't a word, it should be.
But I am of the Neil Postman, Marshall McLuhan School of Media Studies, which, you know, the brain really hasn't sped up to keep up with technology. And I think the United States in general is a culture that wants a quick fix, and I'm in liberal arts education because I believe profoundly that we need time to reflect once we find all this information. And I think that's what higher education can give students and faculty the chance to still do, is to think about and discuss and question sources and authority, presumed authority. And that's what I hope we don't lose in this country. We have a tradition of liberal arts education that produces citizens that ask questions that need to be asked in this democracy we live in and operate in, and doesn't necessarily exist across the world of higher education. So I hope we don't lose it. It doesn't mean I'm not for online education. I've taught online for 20 years. I think it can be as good a form of education as face-to-face, but I just think I hope that education never loses interaction between students and teacher. So I'm not sure I answered that question.
Yeah. You actually, I was thinking about that face-to-face, and you actually said it better than I could put it together. But I wonder about that. Is there... I don't know that they feel a sense of isolation, but it's, compared to what I was used to, you're sort of physically separated. You're not necessarily in the classroom next to your fellow student or looking at the teacher. And I don't know. It seems to me that somehow must have an effect. And I don't know whether it's good or bad.
Well, more and more research is coming out about it. I think there's no perfect teaching and learning environment. A lecture hall with 500 students in it could be as much distance education as an online-only class because, the distance in a 500-seat lecture hall is pretty vast. I like the idea of hybrid classes where you have a mix of face-to-face and some online component. I think that's a good idea, especially for undergraduates and graduate students. Our adult degree program is mostly online, and, you have to keep honing your skills as a teacher and as a student to make the medium work for you.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no perfect perfect learning environment. People have different learning styles. Teachers have different teaching styles. So there's rarely a utopian place where all this works magically well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just because we're all humans in the end, trying to make this work.
You know what that made me? Well, we are. And, you know, again, as you were speaking there, it reminded me that often if we look back on our education, we'll have that one or two or maybe three teachers who we really bonded
yeah.
with and mm-hmm. and really made a difference. Maybe they singled us mm-hmm. out, us out, and took the time to encourage us in some way, or it just resonated for some reason. And I wonder if that's in jeopardy, if that relationship is in jeopardy.
Well, I hope not. As someone who's taught online for 20 years, I think you have a different kind of relationship with students, and it's very possible to do that online as well as face-to-face. But having said that, I teach in a liberal arts college for a reason, because I like to have students in my office. You know, I want to get to know who they are, not just inside the classroom. I'm an advisor, too, for first-year students. So I make that choice. I made that choice consciously 30 years ago that I didn't want to work in a large environment or online only. But having said that, I certainly have cultivated teaching and learning relationships with online only or primarily forums. It's just different. And I think that is changing and will continue to change the teaching and learning experience going forward. Because online education is often cost less. And, you know, it's tough times for many families to fund students. So at Linfield, we really provide value for our students, I think. And we offer a range of courses online and face-to-face and hybrid. But everything's changing. You know that, Stephen.
Sure.
Who knows what's
going
to be like in 20
years.
It's a little
bit different take.
Yeah.
Well, oh, boy. Yeah, I almost don't want to speculate. But I was going to say, to the extent that I've had any contact with the Linfield students, they have been universally pleasant and helpful and sharp and inquisitive and all the things that, you know, as an older person that I might fear we're losing.
Right.
That's not been my experience, at least at Linfield.
And that's why I like working here, because that's been my experience pretty categorically.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I want to pay it forward, recreate what I was given as a student. Mm-hmm. Yep. That makes it fun to work here. Keeps
you
young, too.
Well, it does, you know, which is a whole other show we could get into. But I wind up working with and interacting with really an age range. And I just enjoy them all. And I guess when I look out my eyes and, you know, and I don't see myself in the equation, I don't know if this is going to make any sense, but I feel like I'm perfectly compatible with whoever I'm talking with. So if it's kids from the college, I don't really feel out of place. But if it's the church I go to, there's a fella, he's 80-something, he's a farmer. I mm-hmm. feel like I can talk to him just as well. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't feel that mm-hmm. age separation. So
that's good.
Boy, that was an aside. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that
I wanted
was
to
quite
ask
an
you,
aside.
you've talked about the library as a fourth place.
Yeah.
Can you kind of unpack that definition a little bit?
Well, yes. You know, there. Now I'm going to forget the theory behind this, Stephen, but there are several places where people meet with other people and get their information. And so one is home, one is church, one is usually school, but I might have the third one wrong. And then the fourth place is often, has been newspapers, but that's certainly changing. And it's been
mm-hmm.
cafes. But libraries, now that many libraries are kind of cafes anyway, especially college, university libraries, that becomes a place where people can gather and work together. So we have a lot of creation spaces in this library, and it's typical of many college and university libraries, where students not only consume knowledge they find in print or online, but they create knowledge pieces. This is going way beyond the term paper into creating movies.
Yeah.
And it's way beyond PowerPoint. It's just displaying knowledge in a different way that is more probably what they're used to making. Students pop up movies on YouTube all the time. So that is a generational shift. So we now students create knowledge in different formats than we did years ago, or than many of us did. So fourth place just means another gathering place. The public library, McMinnville Public Library, is a good example of that. They have lots of programs and workshops for people in Yamhill County to use. So it's that kind of different notion of a place for people to gather and learn or be together. Because in this Facebook age, people tend to feel quite isolated from each other. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. But,
so
you
that's
know what's
what I mean
a real
that.
Shift is, and I think that there is an old-fashioned perception of libraries as a little bit dusty and a place where you get shushed, but that's not the way it is now.
You know,
it's,
I don't know
like
any libraries like that. Yeah, I'm on the national board for the Association of College and Research Libraries, and I work with some of the most amazing people throughout the country, and I don't know any academic college or university library that happens anymore. We're all about facilitating knowledge making, and about and often we're noisy places now. In fact, there have to be floors designated to be quiet because, you know, technology itself has brought in a level of noise. Printers, they've, you know, people complaining over printers. So I don't know many libraries that are dusty or anyone's asked to be quiet. It does not,
well,
doesn't happen here. Stereotype.
Yeah, an old, I'm thinking, you know, Andy of Mayberry era.
And
I don't know. You know what? I was going to say maybe that wasn't true, but I think it was. I think I actually remember being in libraries where you just, at least as a kid, you just had to be as quiet as you could be.
And libraries now are trying to be both. So it's hard for us here at Linfield to be both because we're just one floor and it's very open. But libraries recognize that people still need quiet places to be. So we have study rooms with doors that shut here. But other libraries have multiple floors, have floors that are actually quiet, more monastic kind of places. But I remember what you do, public library being very quiet. Yep. That's certainly gone.
I know. Well, I'm going to let you get back to work, but just let me say again what a terrific job you guys are doing and how
much it's
appreciated in the community. And I'm sure beyond that, but, you know, what I see is here in the community.
And, well, thank you very much.
I really do think that, Linfield is kind of the anchor, so we just appreciate you so much.
Well, thank you very much.
And I'll
see
come
you
by.
All.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I like your suggestion about doing an event again. We'll do that.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Well, thanks for joining us, folks. This is Stephen Long, and again, my website, stephenwlong.com. The website is There's a Somebody, and I guess we're having a little emergency vehicle go by. And hope you have a great Monday and a great week. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one. No is the saddest experience you'll ever know. Yes, it's the saddest experience you'll ever know. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. Of. one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is